Hello, everyone. Welcome to another episode of the Cyber Security Recruiter podcast. Today, I'm joined by Jason. How are you doing, Jason? You okay?
I'm good, Thomas. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, good for everyone listening. Me and Jason were just chatting about the fact that we're quite happy it's 4th of July week and we're secretly looking forward to maybe a little bit of downtime and a little bit of decompression chill time.
This week tends to be a bit slower for us and I'm going to take every opportunity for that.
Yeah, cool. For everyone listening that doesn't know who you are, Jason, I'm just going to do you a bit of an intro. Jason Frank started off back in 2006. At the Information Assurance Club at Penn State, then also was a speaker, volunteer for TED. You then moved on to be an Information Assurance Engineer A International. You were also a SANS mentor, which will be really interesting to dig into. You then went on to work at Coldfire. You progressed, started off as a penetration tester, progressed up to senior and team lead, progressed up to a manager, and then eventually progressed up to a director. And then you started the very well-known Spectre Ops. You currently hold the posting there of Chief Operations Officer. Jason, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Thomas. Yeah, you've definitely touched on a few positions I haven't thought about in a while. So I appreciate you bringing a lot of that up and happy to explore anything there.
Yeah, no worries. There's lots we can dig into today. Obviously, a lot of people listening will be familiar with Spectre Ops. It'll be nice to hear what you've got going on with stuff in general, with tooling. I saw some stuff on the website earlier with AI. So it'll be nice to hear what you've got going on and what you guys and girls are up to on the team. But I'll start where I always start, which is, did you get up today and what have you been up to career-wise and what's a day in the life of Jason looking like at the minute?
I think the nice thing about running the company is that you get a new day almost every day. That can be good and bad, right? Because some people thrive in routine. And if you ever look at any of those like personality tests or whatever, I supposedly thrive in routine, but I actually find enjoyment by taking a look at my day can be focused on some financial thing or some people thing, or, hey, we want to solve this very technical problem, and I can context switch and I can keep my head in different spaces a lot. Certainly we have the things that we run into and that we're running at from a company side, and you can use that to shape your priorities, but being able to mix and match what you're working on is just, it's something that I love to do.
Yeah, definitely. It would be nice to get into the Spectre Ops journey in a minute, Jason. I'm looking forward to hearing about it and hearing about how you really got things off the ground. I know just before we hit record, you were talking about that transition from technical to businessman or business owner, business leader. There'll be a lot of people listening that want to make the transition to either a business leader or maybe just a leader in general. How hard was that journey? Have you got any kind of tips or hints for people listening that are about to go on it or maybe they're on it right now?
What was interesting is when I got out of school, out of my undergrad program, I had a desire to grow in a technical way and found positions that would give me exposure into that. And it worked for a while. I paid attention to the work I was doing, and I really took a look and assessed everything that I found enjoyment from. And I think you have to take stock in that, and you just really say, okay, what gets you up every day? And honestly, I was surrounded in my positions by some of the most technically brilliant people I think I've ever had in my career. And to this day, that is the case. But what was happening is as our team was growing, we were building this small offensive security team early in my career. And everybody was deep into the technical weeds. And there would be problems coming up like, oh, okay, what are we doing on our next test? Did anybody have a conversation, right? And it was just this, at the time, it felt like routine dumb stuff that you're like, okay, this is just something that should be happen for me. But there's so much more to it than that. And if you can get and build a program, and if you can build an environment where the technical people thrive, to me, that was more like, I was more passionate about doing something like that. And it was just an honest conversation with myself to say, yeah, this is the track I want to go down.
Okay. Yeah. So really establishing what was going to keep you stimulated and happy and tap into your sense of purpose for, and then channeling your energy in that right direction. Was it a lot? Was it a heavy lift to get the skills that you needed to get as opposed to technical? Did it come quite naturally, or was there some bits easier than others? Or
I can tell you this. I think that there's a, if you go down a leadership track, certainly there are a number of leadership development courses and formal things you can do. I got my MBA at one point once I figured I was going this direction. But I think tactically, the biggest thing that I probably had the biggest issue with, and sometimes I still have to remind myself of this, is you need to derive your career satisfaction in a different way as a leader. So for example, and here's one of my prouder moments of my career, is back when the DerbyCon conference was around, the final DerbyCon conference, SpectreOps was able to sponsor that conference. But of the several talks that were there, I think we had 7 or 8 of those talk slots, and they were very highly attended talks. And not only was it our technical folks that were up there doing their thing, but we had some new speakers in the mix that were picked up to speak at DerbyCon as well. And so it's not me giving the talk, but I know that we were able to build the environment that allowed that to happen. And so you have to derive that career satisfaction in an indirect way. And I think that's the biggest flip for me that I had.
Yeah, okay. Because you almost need to drop the ego and let other people come through and realize that it's probably not all of, it's bigger than you. And it's, I can imagine that's a bit of a shift, especially if you come from leading teams and stuff like that. I bet it's a bit of a transition, but that self-awareness then is quite key.
It is. And actually, it's very interesting you say that, because even on our recruitment page, there's a saying there. It says, the highest caliber cybersecurity professionals' egos need not apply. And I think that's probably something that we certainly filter for when we do our screens for people coming into the company.
Yeah, I've heard that before, Jason. I've got one particular client and they're always just like, Tom, no divas. Please don't send us any divas. But yeah, so Jason, what's that transition like now? SpectreOps, obviously, like, there's loads going on. It's all great. But what's it actually like? You've gone from Coalfire to diving out on your own. Is it as frightening as it sounds? What was it really? It'd be nice to hear about any kind of tough moments as well. Like I say, I know things are pretty good now, but I'm sure it hasn't always been that way.
It's actually worse. It's more frightening than you even know it is. And I think that's the problem. But so I'll give you a snippet of our origin story here. A lot of us were part of a previous team, and that previous team was actually acquired by Coalfire. And we decided that that was the time when we wanted to try something ourselves. And so we did. And I looked at my family. I had a lot of conversations with folks that I trust, my family certainly. And I said, look, this is what I want to try. And we actually had just our first child. And I was still in my MBA program. And my mother-in-law at the time worked for Vanguard. She did retirement planning. And so she's all about, you got to make sure things are stable. And she's, wait, you're doing what? This guaranteed income that you're getting, and you're doing what with my grandchild? And this was 2017. And obviously, cybersecurity is a pretty hot market. And I had thought at the time, if this didn't work out, I'll just go get a real person job. And because it would have been a regret if I didn't try. And there were certainly a bunch of issues that I'll get into, but I think that was the right call at the time. And I just said, look, I think a lot of people end up with a series of regrets on the back end. Hey, I should have tried this or that. Funny enough, now that where we are, I talked to my mother-in-law and she's, I'm glad you made that choice. I'm glad you didn't listen to me. And I think it was great. Early on in a company, there are just things that you don't even know about. I was running a services team at the previous company, and the biggest thing I had to worry about, I needed to make sure clients were lined up. I needed to make sure the work was being done at a certain quality. And I needed to make sure I hit a certain revenue target on a monthly basis. Those were the big three things. Mm. And so I go into it and I said, those are the things I need to worry about. No, that's only a fraction of it. Mm. Now I need to worry about making sure that contracts are negotiated and make sure that payment terms are in such a way that I get paid so I can actually make payroll, right? And so there's this whole unknown unknowns that I just didn't know. And so you pretty rapidly find this out, and these are problems you have to solve or else you fail pretty quickly. So there was just a series of these things, and there continues to be as you scale. It is very hard to get started, and then it's very hard to get to certain milestones. And once you do that, scaling, it is still a set of problems, but you at least at this point establish a framework for dealing with problems.
How did you learn those things? Was it just literally just learning on the fly with negotiating a contract, or did you? I don't know. I like to say where you say it's when I say it was, no, it's not that bad. It's worse.
Yeah, there's a couple of things there. And you learn pretty quickly. You get sent a contract from a customer, and it's this 50-page document that you have to return, review terms and conditions. And you say, and it's legalese. I'm like, I can't even read this. It is English, but I can't read it. And so pretty quickly, you have to find a lawyer that specializes in this stuff. And then you keep getting beat up over certain things over the past near the next 2 years, and you get this playbook down of, okay, these are the things we can give on and these are the things we can't. And so you deal with that. And really what it comes down to is like getting the right people in place and just knowing that you have resources where you can ask questions to get to the right people, because you yourself aren't going to be able to spin up or become an expert in everything. The other thing that is very valuable is it really depends. The people that you start the business with are really influences the direction on whether or not you're going to be successful or not. Because if you can have people, especially partners, that can challenge your thinking and maybe take out the biases that you might bring to the table, I think that allows for better decision-making and better, more thoughtful approaches to your decisions. And I think that is just super important. There have been many days, me myself, like I've gotten out of bed and I said, I can't do this today. And it's the partner on the other end of the table that says, no, we're going to do it. And here's how we're going to get through it. And so I think it really is a team effort to be able to be successful.
Yeah, thanks, Jason. And you know what, mate? It's nice to hear you say that out loud, because people listening, it might be doing something at work. It might be that someone's been laid off and they're trying to get back on the job market. It might be someone running their own business. But to hear you say that, some days it's like, how can I do this? Because I'm the same. And stuff on social media, you think everything's always hunky-dory and perfect for everyone. But it's not. It's nice to hear you share that, because I'm sure a lot of people out there are the same. You mentioned they're getting beat up for 2 years. So beat up on when things are tough and your back's against the wall. You've mentioned there's essentially leaning on your support network and your partners within the business and stuff like that. Is there any other kind of tips you've got for people listening that are maybe having some tough times or struggling and things like that?
I think the big thing is that you can certainly go out and you have to have a really solid set of routines that kind of help you think clearly. So I'm reading this book right now. It's called Shine. And it's a whole exercise in thinking about any situation and thinking about how to approach the situation. A lot of people tend to look at a situation, especially one that negatively impacts them, and they think cynically about it. And those kind of negative thought tendencies it's almost like a self-sabotage type thing. However, if you think positively, like I can tell you this, the first customer I worked for right out of undergrad was incredibly difficult, borderline abusive to the consulting team that they had in there. And I just remember thinking, and I actually had a very good boss at the time that was above me, and the contract was for a period of time, and you just got through it. And even through those bad experiences, you find the gold in that, and you say, look, you know, these are the things that I can take away. So he told me, imagine you being the leader, and this is how those actions are perceived by folks underneath you. Know that to internalize it and use that in the future. So now I am in a leadership position and I know things to avoid. And so I think with any situation that you find difficult, there are certain things that you can do. You might be certainly looking for your next role, but you, through that process, you might discover groups of people or research areas or things that you just haven't encountered before, and you might spark a passion that you just haven't had before and something that you can iterate on. But you might be able to do that maybe because you have a little bit of time on your hands. And I think you just take a look at that, you figure out ways that you can develop yourself even in the worst of times.
Yeah, Jason, I really like that, mate. I saw something on, I think it was somewhere on LinkedIn, and it was talking about if imposter syndrome was just labeled as you're in an optimal phase of growth or you're in a rapid growth mode because you feel really uncomfortable, we'd probably view it as really positive. And that's how you're talking. And I can really relate it to stuff that I have going on at work. You can look at so many things negatively, or you can go, hang on, there's a lot of benefits here if I do this, even if it's perhaps not great at the time. So, yeah, it's massive. It mindset with everything, especially like getting a business off the ground or just getting anywhere in life. Like, it's everything, mate, isn't it? So important.
Yeah, certainly. And I think people around you will respond to that line of thinking too, because if you are able to react positively in the face of adversity, I think that's just a natural thing that attracts people, and then it attracts opportunities to you.
Yeah, no, definitely, mate. And I think as well, in terms of creating the right culture internally within the business and stuff like this, all this has a massive trickle-down effect on the team and the culture and retention and everything like that. So it definitely makes a big difference. And it brings me on quite nicely to where we'll move on to next, which is what you've got going on at SpectraOps. It'd be nice to hear about how you deal with the team members creating various tooling and IP. It'll be nice to hear about some of the new tools. It'd be nice to hear how you create that culture of innovation and stuff like that. And yeah, I'm sure there's a lot of things here that you can tell me. I'll let you tell me what's going on, mate.
Sure. Yeah, so at SpectraOps, one of the core tenets, one of the values that we have at the company is empowerment through transparency. And the reason that we say that is because we look at InfoSec as this nascent industry as compared to something like, I don't know, like a hard science, like physics and or healthcare. And 100 years ago, it took 2 weeks to go become a surgeon, and then you could start lopping off arms. That has certainly matured today. And cybersecurity is certainly not that nascent. But I think that with the complexity of the attacks and everybody kind of being on the same team here, adversaries are a creative bunch. And I think that the more that we can talk about, educate the market on what adversaries are doing, I think the better. The purpose at SpectraOps is we demystify adversary tradecraft. And what we mean by that is we really dig into what is happening under the hood. We educate people about that. We make it visible so people can actually work on this stuff, because we can't solve every problem ourselves. And then people have enough context to make a risk decision on how they can reduce what the adversary can do. And so we've tooled the company around discovering that tradecraft, consuming that tradecraft, amplifying kind of the underpinning ideas of what's going on there so that folks can defend against those attacks. A lot of our folks and a lot of the tools and things like that that come out of our company are geared towards that educational component, making sure that folks are aware. But then on the product side, that is more geared towards, hey, let's understand the attack possibilities within the environment so we can get ahead of them before they become a problem. I think a lot of people are drawn to us because they see the caliber of work that comes out of the group. And specifically a lot of the tool sets. I'll give you a little peek behind the curtain. So Bloodhound is one of our tools. It started as an open source project. We have a commercial version called Bloodhound Enterprise. That IP is all owned by the company. That is a SpectraOps product. Everything else that is associated with our company, so I'm talking things like Mythic, which is a C2 framework, Nemesis, which is a AI operator augmentation framework, Ghostwriter, which writes offensive reports. All of those tools are actually intellectual property of the individual folks in the company. And the reason that we do that is we have a model internally that it's similar to the Google model, where you get about 20% of your time that you can work on in kind of passion projects. In some cases, they become more than that. And we have thoughts on how we can turn that into something more. But I think for the majority of things, because one of our values is transparency, we want to make sure that people get this stuff out here. out there in the market. And so our employee agreement is actually written. It's written into the IP piece. A lot of companies say, hey, anything that you create while you're here is ours. We actually have some carve outs that say most of it's yours and you can do with what you want. And as long as you open source it, we want you to get that stuff out there. And if you don't open source it, it's ours. So there's an incentive to do that, but that's us living our values, right? And I think that is something that's unique to us. It's certainly a draw for our folks that come. And then if there is something where one of the projects does turn into something more, then we have a way that we can compensate people to make them whole on that side. So I think that is something that our folks love working for us.
Yeah, cool. So basically, the individuals can essentially own their own IP, providing it goes outsourced. They get a minimum of 20% time in work hours to really work on these passion projects, and they're incentivized to do. How does it go down then, Jason? So so a passion project's turning pretty cool. You can see it's going to be useful. You can see it's going to add value. Let's use, I don't know, maybe Bloodhound as an example. What kind of happens? Are you looking at what's going on with the team and going, hang on a minute, this looks serious, and then more time and resources are allocated? How do you spot a winner?
It's so funny because I think that this has always been a challenge in the industry. We started as a services company, and very rarely do services companies successfully make the transition into a product company and doing it in an authentic way. And so I think that's something unique about the SpectroOps journey. The life cycle that we have there is a bunch of us started as a bunch of hackers, right? And so all we're doing is we see a problem in front of us and we just try and, you know, solve the problem by any means necessary, bending the rules and all that stuff. And so then, you know, what comes out of it is typically a script or some sort of, you know, cobbled together thing that, you know, achieves the immediate objective. And that's certainly fine for maybe the test that you're on or whatever. But then where we found success is somebody might have this thing, but then maybe somebody else in the company might say, hey, I'm interested in that problem too. Let's work together on it. So it's essentially like this micro version of what I talked about, partners starting a company. Mm. I think that when you get somebody who is also working on the same thing, you feed off of each other and really run it to the ground. And so for us on the Bloodhound side, that story was with Andy Robbins, Rohan Berserker, and Will Schrader. And they all brought different elements to what was the first version of Bloodhound. And at some point you realize, oh, this thing is very buggy, or maybe I don't have the engineering top chops, or maybe I don't fully understand the technology here. So we need to solve for this, but there's momentum here. We build a community. We have a Slack community with, I think at this point, there's over 30,000 folks in that Slack room. And you say, oh, okay, obviously people are interested in this. So it's not just the tool. It's a combination of we go out there, we educate people on the attacks. They have the tool that they can digest what we're talking about. And then they can see it in their environment. So you're creating this center of knowledge, excellence, and everybody's starting to feed off of each other. And once we figured out that this was going to be a thing, we actually went out and we said, okay, we need a leader in this space. And at the time, because we were a services company, Andy and Rohan were still billing on like consulting assessments. And the leader, Justin Kohler, who came in, he said, nah, that's the first thing that has to go. These people have to be fully on the product development. Okay. We said, oh no, we don't need that. We actually did and more. And so I think that there's like a lot of like rapid learning and getting off the ground there. But then you keep scaling it until you find out where things break, and then you have to retool and adjust and go from there. You might hit a technical thing, you might hit a sales thing, you might hit a marketing thing, you might hit maybe a coverage thing, and you're like, okay, again, you're hitting a new problem. I'm pretty good about dealing with problems, and so it's not a problem I've seen before, but I have a framework for tackling problems. Mm-hmm. And that's how you get from this is a proof of concept script to full-blown enterprise product is going through those series of problems.
I tell you what, mate, I bet it's such good fun though, isn't it?
Oh, it's incredible. Yeah. But that's back to the exposure, right? Like, I get to see all kinds of different things and get exposure to different circumstances. And for a while, we couldn't hire like a professional engineer. We didn't know how. And now we do. And I'm like very happy myself that we consider ourselves like a destination employer for not only consultants, but for engineers as well. Mm. And then as we're building different teams, whether it's sales or marketing or finance or whatever, like we can start to claim that as we get better at building that part of the company.
I can imagine as well, when that decision was made to take the guys off billing and onto that full time, because I was going to say, I bet it's really hard to leave it alone when you get some momentum. So I bet they loved that when that decision was made.
Early on in the business, and so we started in 2017, and we had just killer. Our first financial goal in 2017 was that we just wanted to make $1, right? We didn't want to lose too much money. So we did. We ended up making a couple $1,000s on the statement. We were happy with that. The next 2 years were very successful. We did several million dollars for the first few years of the company, and we were able to grow the team and scale that. But it was all bootstrapped, right? We were all just living within any of the margin that we were working on. And so for 2020, obviously the pandemic came and that kind of presented a set of new challenges for us. And we just had to figure out how to navigate that. But we were able to keep pace on our product development. And we formally launched the product in August of 2021. And it had a lot of early success, probably because of a lot of the goodwill that we had within information security. And we're still writing some of that today. But at the time, we realized that there were certain limits to only being able to run based off of your margin from working capital. And so that's when we decided to actually say, okay, we're going to put some gas on that. We see the opportunity going away because we're just not able to capitalize on it. And so that's when we decided to take the investment that we did.
Okay, cool. Listen, it sounds great, mate. Hacking, building tools, a few million coming in. Sounds like you're living the dream.
It's that, but honestly, it's back to it's the people that you're doing it with. I think probably the biggest piece of advice of all the stuff that you're looking for, like at me looking to recruit people, the biggest thing that I look for is, can I spend a good chunk of my life with this person? Mm-hmm. Because that's what it is. You spend a lot of time in your job and you spend a lot of time dealing with this person. Yes, you might be tested for some individual specific things and skill sets for the role. And you should. You're going to be tested for that. But more than anything, especially if the company is able to have a training pipeline to get you there, is they're going to be looking for a cultural fit to see, yes, are you going to be able to run things down to the ground? Are you going to be able to be thoughtful about your responses? Do you have a good head on your shoulders for day-to-day decisions that need to be made? And that to me is the through line that was when people describe the gut check, I think that's what they mean.
Yeah, definitely. And I think since things have gone more remote, I feel, I don't know about you, but I feel like I'm spending even more time at work and even more time interacting with people. It's just on and off Zooms every day and my commute's disappeared and I'm fully remote, but I'm working longer hours. So I don't know how that works. Maybe I need to check myself, but it's very consuming, isn't it?
Yeah, you know, I'm a remote company, so during the pandemic, it wasn't that big of a transition. One of the things that we do today even is that while we are mostly remote, we do get the employees together 2 to 3 times a year for about a week, just to make sure that everybody has a bit of FaceTime together. And I think that's super important just from a rapport side and whatnot. And then the other thing I encourage people to do is everybody is tied to their phone. So even when you're not on your laptop, you can get notifications on your phone. Mm-hmm. I turn all of that off. So I turn my Slack off. I turn my email off from the notification side. So I can still access it, but I access it on my terms. Mm-hmm. And I think that's done a lot for me on the always on problem. Mm-hmm.
I've got a problem with that. It's Slack's on the phone, email's on the phone, LinkedIn's on the phone. It's good and bad. It can be good and bad. Jason, there's a few different directions I can take it. It'd be nice. Hearing the Bloodhound and how it's been made and stuff like that, that's really nice. Like, really nice to hear you talk about that. There's a couple of little questions I've got on that.
Sure.
It'd be interesting to talk about investment and choosing. I know like Spectre Ops is yours and the guy's baby. So I'm imagining like choosing an investor is like quite a big thing. But with Bloodhound, how long does it take? So when you see things evolving and things developing, how long does it take to go, hang on, we've got something here, to actually getting it to the stage where it's really rocking and rolling and getting out there to the community?
So I can tell you that there are, when you start with an offensive security background or like a hacker mentality, you're almost built so that no problem is insurmountable. That's okay in some cases, but what that biases you to do is dismiss the gravity of how hard it is to bring a product to market. So we're like, oh yeah, we could, you know, slap a GUI on this and it'll be fine. People will pay for it. No, that's not, it doesn't scale. What we actually did was we brought in outside help and we said, look, here's the thing that we're going to do. And here's, so many companies get this wrong on, or so many companies try where they maybe have an open source version of the tool, and then maybe it's just a subset of features of their enterprise tool that people pay for. And that might work, but it wasn't the approach that we took for Bloodhound. The approach that we took was the community edition, or what we're calling the community edition now, is basically an educational tool. So offensive folks will go in and they'll look at an environment and they'll say, look, I need to get from point A to point B, and here are ways that I can get there. And how I get there are the specifics of the different attacks that are within Bloodhound. And there's links and educational content around the specific attacks. But that is a use case for an offensive security professional. The enterprise version, the assumption there is the person consuming that is on the defender side or the identity team side. And their wants, needs, desires are entirely different. And so you have to tool for that. And the biggest thing that the tool does is, yes, you have these attack paths, but these on the enterprise side, these are the specific things that will cut off the most attack paths within your network. And so that's super valuable on the defender side, which ultimately is what we're trying to get to. And so we went to market and we brought that with those assumptions, and we took that to an external consultant and we said, this is how I think we need to differentiate. And then he worked with us on things like, what's your ideal customer profile and how do you get to them and what's the messaging and all that stuff. And yeah, you look at it from like a technical offensive security professional. Oh, this isn't that hard. And it is very surprising to see how somebody who is technical can condense a message, a highly technical message, into something that is super consumable in 1 to 2 lines. That is a very difficult thing to do. And so as you iterate through that, there are a series of milestones that you get to. Hey, we're going to do this survey. It's a pricing survey. One of the first things we did was a pricing survey. And we said, if the average price doesn't hit a certain amount, that's the gate. Then we have to, you know, this fails and we have to go back to the drawing board. And so you have to retool that. And the next thing might be, well, okay, we're going to send out an event and we're going to try and get people into this educational thing. And do we get 100 people to this webinar? And if that doesn't fail, or if that fails, then we're out, right? And so you create these series of gates that you have to pass through. And as you pass through more and more gates, you're more and more confident that the product is going to be successful when you finally launch it. And so this was a whole different line of thinking for us, that this third party brought some formality and maturity to how we were thinking about the process. And it was super, we didn't know at the time, but it was super important and super valuable for us to go through this process.
I bet it was great for your own kind of self-development as well, like going on that journey with someone that's been drafted in that kind of knows that field. I bet it was quite cool.
It was. I think that there's and back to the ego thing, I think that if you're open-minded and you just go into a conversation with, or any situation, just knowing that there's something for you to learn in this situation, even if you are an expert in your field, I think that serves you very well just in life.
Mm, it does. I was just about to say, there's like, when you're speaking, I'm listening for like key learnings as you're speaking, and it's like seeked outside help, hired an expert. It's like you do have a certain amount of self-awareness and humility, really. Even like when you're talking about the early stages, leveraging your partners, leveraging your mother-in-law, you talked about, it's constantly leaning on these, whether it's your network personally or in a business sense. So you're not just doing it all on yourself. Let's say with Bloodhound, it wasn't, oh, listen, we'll just have a crack ourselves. It was, no, let's get someone in and do it. And having, again, yeah, having that awareness to do that has clearly allowed you to kick on. And I think it's a really important thing for the listeners to grasp. It's good.
One of the things that my uncle taught me when I was just a kid is he put it in a way I could understand it. He said, those who have the best grades and the most friends tend to do the best. And what he meant was, obviously, like, you have to individually do your part, and then you have to have a network that you can rely on. Mm. And then that doesn't guarantee success, but I think it maximizes your chances. And if you do one part of that or the other, you're not taking advantage of everything that's around you. And so I think that has served me well since I was single digits.
Mm, cool. One more tool question, then I promise I'll stop talking about tools. But what's it, is it getting easier now then? Like I know we talked about Nemesis before and stuff like that. Is it now that you've got like, I'm imagining you've got like a bit of a way of doing things. You've got like a methodology mapped out, shall we say. Is it getting easier? Is it allowing you to create better tools, or are you trying to get to the destination quicker? I don't know. What else is going on the tool side?
No, I think we put a lot of work into, again, creating that environment where people can be successful. And I think a lot of these tools, there was one that came out earlier this year, and it'll be at Black Hat coming up here in the next month or so. It's a tool called Misconfiguration Manager. And it's basically a bunch of different attacks for a technology called SCCM. And a lot of our folks were researching this thing, and we were putting out blog post content on it. And then Misconfiguration Manager allows you to, again, like Bloodhound did, is people can get hands-on with this stuff and really be able to understand it. And what I find, and there's about 3 or 4 people internally that like actively work on this tool, and it's a passion for them. They get to learn something, so it's an individual thing. They get to present on it, so that's an individual thing. But then the company benefits too, because we can associate with the folks who are behind this project. And that's win thinking right there. And I think that not everybody is going to respond to that, certainly. But for those who do, I think the quality of the tools that are coming out are driven intrinsically by the passion that these people put into this stuff. And it shows in the work, and it shows in the caliber and the quality of the stuff that comes out.
Yeah, cool. And you've clearly built an environment to be able to foster that as well. You really opened it. Do the guys get pretty obsessed when they get onto something?
Yeah. There are some cases when we're like, okay, we got to pull you back a little bit. We actually, we're pretty keen on looking at, we track PTO internally, and we track to make sure that people actually take their PTO, right? Yeah. Because if they don't, you get into these situations where some of these individuals, they're like, maybe they're a little stressed out and they might not have the best productive reaction. And you're like, when's the last time you took PTO? Oh, last year.
Cool. I was going to ask you about burnout before. You just reminded me. Any kind of tips on that? You've alluded to one there, but it is a real thing, especially in security. I say especially in offensive security as well, actually. I think it's probably the height of it. But yeah, any thoughts on that for listeners, Jason?
Yeah, I think there's a routine that you have to get. This is what works for me, right? I don't know if this works for everybody, but I think when you get into the industry and maybe you're new to it, there's this like realization that there's just so much to learn. And then people naturally want to set themselves apart from the person next to them. And so what they do is they just grind into whatever they're doing. And sometimes they grind sideways where they're just looking at a bunch of different things. And sometimes they grind deep and they get really specific on one or two different technologies. And that's fine. You can do that, I think, in short bursts. Some of our best researchers that we have internally, what they do is they allow themselves to grind for maybe a few weeks at a time, but then they have to pull back and they have to recharge. And if they don't recharge, I can almost schedule it on a calendar that there's going to be a problem. But for me, what I do is a couple very tactical things. Like I just back to some of the basics, diet, exercise, making sure that you're with some of that stuff. Sleep is incredibly important. And I can tell you as a business owner, a lot of times you don't get sleep because of maybe you're working or maybe it's stress or maybe it's both. And so what I tend to do is I have this model where I will not look at email at all until the last part of the day, which is scary, right? But at some point later in the day, maybe 4 or 5 o'clock, I just open up my email and I pull out the things that are of actual urgency and importance that I have to deal with. And I write it down for the next day to deal with it. And that's what I do. And then I'll essentially plan my day, my next day, at the end of my current day. And so that gives me some degree of confidence that like I've captured everything that I need to and realizing that I'm not going to get to everything. And so what is the most important 3 to 5 things that I need to hit in the next day? Mm. And you go to sleep and you sleep better because you know that you've captured that. You don't have to stress about it that night. So a combination of kind of some of the fundamental, like help, just taking care of yourself, but also some routine things that I do as far as like planning for myself, I think really helps with the stress and burnout piece.
I love that. One of the benefits of the podcast that I never knew would happen is it helps my own self-development. That will make you hyper-productive as well because you're not constantly checking things throughout the day, which will really help with your productivity. Also, mate, I know if I email you in the morning, then I know you're not ignoring me.
If I've done that, I apologize. Or you haven't hit the top 5 and I just haven't gone back to you at all. So, no, I'm just kidding.
No, but I like that as well. So essentially what you're saying is it's basically, yes, grind, yes, go for it, yes, get obsessive, but do it in sprints. Do it in maybe 2, 3, 4, whatever it is that you can handle. And maybe don't be mad with yourself and don't beat yourself up. If you do, then take a bit of time off. So the guys are grinding in, 3-week sprints? And then is it 2 weeks of just more kind of normal hours and then back? What's the off time look like?
Yeah, I can tell you this. What we encourage at the company is, so we do have flexible PTO, and everybody looks at that and they're like, oh, it's just a way to cheat people out of paid time off. And that is true if you don't then hold the managers accountable. So you could do something like you could say, manager, you don't get your bonus if your people haven't taken their PTO. And I think that's like the separate piece to that. To be clear, we don't entirely do that, but we do watch PT and we do watch time off very closely, and we do surface it for conversations. Everybody is different. So everybody's limit is you have to figure it out as a leader. You have to understand like where your people are today and where they're going to be. In some cases, somebody might be able to do 12, 16 hour days for 2 weeks, and then they have to back off or take a day here and there. And that's what works for them. And that might be what works for the company too. But then somebody gets married and they have kids, and that throws everything off. And so you have to know what that individual is up against and understand where the optimum performance is. The onus is on the person too. It's not just the leader. Like the person is going to hit their hard limits one way or another, but you have to learn that data point. And then you have to honor that data point going forward.
Yeah, it is. I think in the consulting game, whether it's pen testing or whether it's recruitment or anything, there's always someone that needs you. Like people could just go and just literally like intrude into your day, especially if you did it across multiple time zones. It's just, you do have to have some, I like the boundaries you've put in, Jason, because it's like, you're making things sustainable and enjoyable for yourself. And also you can be a better leader. You can be a better innovator on the product side. You can be better. I think you called it a routine or some just things in place that allow you to stay the way you are.
Yeah, it is painful. And I don't expect people early in their career to understand their own limits. And just knowing that you may employ people early in their career, that kind of comes with the territory that you may encounter these things. And people, even mid to late career, sometimes they don't know it either. But I think that once you do learn it, then you make sure that you honor it. I think that's just the takeaway there.
Yeah, definitely, mate. On hiring, I know you mentioned anyone you hire, you've got to see yourself spending, being able to spend a lot of time with. Is there other kind of key attributes you looked at? I know we alluded to like persistence and really not wanting to give up on something. But yeah, anything else for people listening that could be helpful?
Yeah, so I talked a lot about the cultural fit stuff. Certainly we look at some of the skill sets for the role. The biggest thing that also that we look for is, can you be persistent at something, anything? Show me that you have persistence. Demonstrate it in some way. Is there a pet project that you're really hyped up about? Do you contribute to organizing conferences? Have you written a book? Show me that you have some passion around what you're doing. And not only just to be passionate about it, but you're able to like do something with that passion. I think that's incredible. I think we had somebody come onto the team recently, and there was some research that came out, and this individual is pretty well known in the industry. And he looks at me and he says, that person over there that I honestly don't hear a ton from, this person's been working on that research for 3 years. I would have given up on that in 6 months, but like this person has run that to the ground. And I think when you're in a nascent space, information security, I think that there's so much value in being able to take what you have and expand upon it. And in order to do that, you have to be able to be persistent with, you know, moving that forward.
Yeah. So real stay in power, persistence, organizing conferences, doing stuff in the community. Have you read a book? And yeah, just that real ability to stick something out and actually see it through to the end and make it happen.
Yeah, exactly. I think that there's a ton there that if you're able to have some wins, like early wins underneath your belt, and you say, oh, okay, I'm creating my legacy, like I'm creating something that is my own body of work. There's an addictive nature to that kind of self-perpetuates.
Yeah, cool. I know you mentioned your uncle earlier before as a bit of a mentor. Has there been any other mentors over the years that have helped you? Any words of wisdom or general advice you've given us that could help me and help the listeners?
I think there's different avenues that you would probably want to have mentors in. I know a lot of people do this. Personally, you might have a mentor, like your big thing might be fitness personally. And a lot of people go out and they find fitness coaches and things like that. And they get themselves where they want to be personally. And that is an incredible experience for them to be able to coach, be coached and pushed and things like that. Professionally, you might have a series of different mentors. I can tell you internally at Spectre Ops, I don't know that I have one mentor. I have a series of interactions with people around me that I'm always learning from. And it doesn't matter if it's somebody who is brand new to the company. Again, I think that there is things that you can take away from that. You have to sift through it sometimes, but there are things that you can take away from it. I think a mentor-mentee relationship is just, it's an incredible experience and it goes both ways. But what I tend to do, and this is back to knowing when you're at your limits, is I look to people who are believable in the space that they've participated in the past. I'll consume some of their stuff. I will try and iterate on some of that and try and show that I've made progress on it. And then maybe at that point, engage them. And maybe it turns into something and maybe it doesn't. But I don't tend to look at this person as my mentor, that person is my mentor. I think that being able to understand the lessons going on around you in a more holistic way is the better way to think about that.
Yeah, cool, Jess. And by consuming their stuff, you mean something on posts or social or whatever it might be? Or
let's take fitness, for example. You might try and get into lifting and you might start doing something. You might hurt yourself. Okay, why did you hurt yourself? You figured it out. Hey, you shouldn't go too hard, too fast. And somebody is out there saying that. And hey, this resonated with me. Great. Maybe then you hit another hurdle. And then maybe it's a really sticky wicket that you can't find the answer yourself on. And so at that point, you would reach out and say, hey, here's what I've tried. I would love to pick your brain. And then I think that's when people naturally gravitate towards mentors, is when they face adversity like that.
Yes, cool. Just not reaching out with any a question that could just be answered really easily, actually showing that you've done a bit of research first.
I think everybody has a finite amount of time, and I think intellectually people want to help each other, but I think people don't necessarily want to hold your hand. They want some, hey, let me show you or let me see that you've done something in an area that I am also passionate about, and maybe then we can have a two-way knowledge exchange.
Cool. All right, mate. Listen, I know I promised you an hour, and we've already gone over, so I won't keep you too much longer. So I was going to ask you about a book. You've already mentioned it. It's called The Shine, did you say? The Shine?
It's just called Shine. It's by Shine. Gina Wickman. Yep. There's a couple others that, for me, are very helpful. And again, my position right now is kind of a leader in a company, and I tend to gravitate towards those types of books. Biggest takeaway for me, I've taken a lot out of a book called Principles by Ray Dalio. Bridgewater and Associates, I think he's famous for predicting the 2008 economy collapse. He talks about systemizing things and candor and things like that. And I think that there's so much there that you can apply to your life. I think there's so much there that I have applied to the company in various different ways. And then the other book that I would recommend is a book called Drive by Dan Pink. And that talks about intrinsic motivation and how you create a reward system around things that allow people to, like, super passionate people to actually thrive in. And so that really focuses more on the cultural aspects of the companies or of our company. And I think that's been super valuable as well.
All right, Jason. Thank you, my friend. You mentioned Black Hat earlier. Are you off to Black Hat this year?
We are off to Black Hat. We have, I think, 6 or 7 training courses at Black Hat this year. We are a sponsor of Black Hat, so we have a booth. We have a event, I think, Wednesday evening at a Brooklyn Bowl in Las Vegas. Typically a very fun event. A few hundred people show up. And yeah, it's just, it's a great time. I've been going to Black Hat since 2011. I actually started as a Black Hat trainer there for one of our early classes. Previous company, but yeah, I've been a trainer for a while and then now transitioned into a sponsor. I was technical at once.
I'm sure you still got it, mate. I'm sure you can still get those hands on the keyboard and prove it to the people if necessary.
Every once in a while, but you're like accessing parts of your brain that you just haven't accessed before. So there's a little bit of dust there sometimes.
All right, my friend. Listen, I know you're a mega busy man, so I really do appreciate your time, Jason. But my friend, it's really nice to see you. Really nice to catch up. It was really nice the way this went as well, because I knew we'd be talking about tooling and stuff like that, but a lot of the stuff on the mindset and how you approach things and your key pillars and how you get forward in life and get successful and stuff like that. It's been a little bit different to how I thought it was going to go, but really nice and really interesting. And you've helped me with certain points. So thank you, my friend. It's been nice to catch up, and I'm sure I'll see you again soon.
Yeah, you as well. I think a lot of people, they look at the outcomes, but I don't know that they look at like how you get there. And so that's really when I do these things, I try and focus on that, because those are the fundamentals that allow for the outcomes. Everybody wants a shortcut, right? You're like, it's not like that.
No, definitely. No one ever sees what goes behind the scenes. I think especially with social media and stuff like that, that whole idea is just perpetuated even more. And there's so much that goes into it. And yeah, fundamentals, getting them right, is key.
Marcus Saylor says hi. I know he was
He messaged me earlier actually going, heard you're interviewing my favorite Spectre Ops person today. No, Marcus is a good guy.
I listened to the segment too, and I was like, oh, that went really well. So
yeah, cool. All right, Jason, is there anything else you think we've covered everything, my friend? You think we've about smashed it?
I think that's it.
Cool. I'll see you soon, buddy.
Thanks.